This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media's Broadband Over Powerline World. We're about to speak to Ben Scott, who's the policy director at Free Press. Welcome to Etopia Media's Broadband Over Powerline World.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Before we talk about H.R. 2726, I wanted to talk about it within the context of the movement to stifle municipal broadband. Could you give us a little bit of background about what's been happening at the state and the local level in regard to efforts by municipalities to provide wireless or other broadband services to their residents?
Certainly. Since January, when the state legislature is open for business, we've seen, I think, 13 different states offer legislation that would either severely restrict or prohibit outright a public institution, whether it's a city or a school or an electric utility, from being in the broadband service provider business, whether on their own or as a partner with a private company.
Now, there was a pretty raucous incident involving Philadelphia in that regard. You know a little bit about that you could tell our listeners?
Sure. That's what really kicked off the whole fight. That was in, I think, November of last year. Pennsylvania, at the end of their legislative session, stuck a bill through the legislature that would prohibit all municipalities in Pennsylvania from going into offering broadband to their citizens, unless they first ask permission of the local incumbent phone company, which in most cases was Verizon. They passed a bill out, and it was sitting in front of the governor's desk for about 10 days. And at that point, the media got a hold of the story, and everybody found out about it and went completely nuts because of this outrageous abuse of power. And at that moment, Philadelphia was talking about building their own citywide wireless network, which would have been made illegal under this legislation. So at the 11th hour, about an hour before Governor Ed Rendell signed that bill into law, Philadelphia carved out a little exemption for itself. So Philadelphia is able to move forward with the municipal project, but everybody else in Pennsylvania is out of luck.
And what did this incident show, and what did it set off nationwide?
Well, it demonstrated the anxiety of the cable and telephone companies that if municipalities or public institutions got the idea of building broadband networks using low-cost wireless equipment, that they might be interested in offering broadband as a public service instead of as a for-profit venture.
Right.
And if they did that, they'd be offering a service that was very low-cost and that everybody liked. And it might become a competitor to the incumbent services, and they went to the state houses and they tried to legislate that competition right out of existence.
Okay, now these telephone companies and cable companies seem in the advertising world, at least, to be dire competitors. Are you saying that they cooperated politically, even though they are always going after each other's business in television ads?
Oh, they absolutely cooperated politically. I mean, their lobbyists were in lockstep on this issue because as much as they might compete with each other, two companies in the market does not a competitive market make. And that little cozy duopoly is something they'd like to preserve as long as possible. And as long as they don't have anyone offering broadband besides them, they stand to make a great deal more money. The last figures that I checked, cable modem and DSL had 98% of the broadband market.
Okay. And as a result of this duopoly, where does the United States stand in the international competition for penetration of broadband?
I think the latest figures show it's at number 16 in the world, which is a pathetic showing, and it really shows, you know, what a serious problem we have in our broadband market and our broadband policy.
Okay, now how is the movement going nationally at different states? Nebraska apparently just passed a bill. Actually, I interviewed the author of it, the speaker of the unicameral.
Mm-hmm.
What does the Nebraska bill do, and how does that fit into the picture?
Well, the Nebraska bill prohibits public involvement in broadband pending a study of the broadband market in Nebraska, which I believe is going to conclude within the next 6 to 12 months. In the meantime, there can be no public broadband activity.
Now, on the other hand, Maine, and I interviewed the author of that bill, just passed a law saying that it's completely legitimate for municipalities to offer broadband wireless services to their residents.
That's true. The Maine bill, to my knowledge, is completely unique. In most of the states that we saw this issue arise, the bills were negative. That is, they attempted to restrict or prohibit municipalities from entering into broadband services.
Okay, and generally, how are they doing? Are they pending? Have they been defeated? Are they looking good? What's the situation there?
Of the 13 states, seven of the bills were defeated outright.
Right.
A couple more were ended up in a compromise,
Right,
and
right.
only one or two ended up with the bells and the cable companies succeeding in getting the bills that they wanted.
Okay, I think now we're ready. We've set the context to talk about H.R. 2726, which is called Preserving Innovation in Telecom Act of 2005. What would this bill do if it were passed?
Well, I think it's an ironically titled bill because any basic economics 101 textbook will tell you that in a marketplace that has only two competitors, you're going to have a stifling of innovation. There's going to be a lack of entrepreneurs. There's going to be a lack of pressure and incentive to innovate and bring new technologies to the market to offer different and better services. That bill, introduced by Representative Pete Sessions from Texas, I think came about as a direct result of the Texas legislature defeating a bill to prohibit municipalities from offering broadband services.
He's from Texas, and that's
He
where
is.
that bill happened.
He's from Texas. He formerly worked for Southwestern Bell, now SBC. His wife works for Southwestern Bell. Southwestern Bell is a major campaign contributor. And almost in the same breath as SBC lost in Austin, Pete Sessions introduced almost exactly the same bill in the federal, in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Okay, before we talk about well, let's talk first about what the provisions of the bill are. What would it do?
That bill would outlaw, or would prohibit, rather, all public activity in broadband services where there is a, quote, similar service in the market.
Now, there have been a lot of issues lately, most egregiously in the California medical marijuana bill that was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court on the basis of the Interstate Commerce Clause, essentially said the federal government trumps the state government when it comes to the regulation of medical marijuana. Where is the constitutional or statutory authority for the federal government to do this to municipalities, let alone states?
Well, in the Telecommunications Act, in Section 253, there's a provision that says any entity may offer broadband services.
The what stands now is the Maine Telecommunications Law, 1996 Act.
That's right.
It says any entity can do that.
It says any entity may offer broadband services. Now, there was a high-profile court case a year ago or so where in Missouri they had a case where the state wanted to prohibit a municipality from going into the broadband business,
Right.
and the case wound its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, you know what? We don't know what the word any means. We don't know what the Congress really wanted there. We don't know whether they meant any meaning both public and private, or whether they meant any meaning any private entity but no public entities. So since we can't interpret the will of Congress, we have no choice but to allow the state of Missouri to do whatever they want.
Sounds a little tendentious to me.
Extremely tendentious, and as you might imagine, it opened up all kinds of political and legislative debate, which resulted in 13 bills in state houses over the course of 2005. And now we're back on Capitol Hill wrangling over whether or not the federal government meant to allow any entity, including public entities, to compete and to offer services to citizens who don't have broadband or can't afford the broadband that's available to them.
Have you or anyone else gone back to look at the legislative history to see whether there are hints about what Congress's intent was at that point when they said any?
Well, it's a matter of debate. It seems clear to me, and I would argue any honest observer,
Any honest observer,
that Congress, when they said any, meant any.
Right.
That they weren't splitting hairs, and if they had been splitting hairs, they would have said so specifically in the bill.
But in any case, if the Congress has the right to authorize any entity to do it has the right to take that right away from any entity as well, doesn't it?
That's correct.
Okay, so it then becomes a political rather than a constitutional legal issue.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about a little bit about Congressman Sessions, a group here, and maybe at the same time you could sort of clarify which the organizations are involved here. I'm looking at a press release from Common Dreams, Progressive Newswire, Latest News for America's Progressive Community, which cites the Free Press, a national nonpartisan media reform group, reported today, and we're going to talk about what you report. What are all these different organizations, and what kind of a movement is present now among different media reform organizations and other groups to focus on this bill?
Well, I think if you look at the lay of the land on who benefits and who suffers from a bill like this, the only beneficiaries from a bill to outlaw competition in the broadband business are the broadband incumbents. It's the cable companies and the telephone companies. Those are the only beneficiaries of a bill like this.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about what Free Press is, the organization.
Free Press is a national nonprofit organization. Our mission is to involve the public in the telecommunications policies that shape their media. So we have an office in Washington where we watch legislation and regulation as it's made, and we write reports and we do public education and we go out and we have town meetings and we hold events where we educate people about what's going on in Washington and we show them how to get involved.
Are you a 501c3 or 501c4?
We are a 501c3.
Okay. So you can't really lobby as such, but you can educate.
We have a side shoot of our organization, which is a 501c3, although it's a very small part.
Right.
We do some lobbying, and of course 501c3s can lobby to some extent.
Okay. And you lobby to that extent?
To that extent we do, although most of the lobbying that we do is educational.
Okay.
We try to be expert as we can on the issues and offer that expertise to legislative staff.
And the public.
And the public, of course.
Okay. Let's talk about Representative Sessions. This press release says that the SBC, which was formerly Southwestern Bell, is his second biggest career patron. Just very briefly, talk about the concept of career patron that Mr. Lewis pioneered, I think, and how it fits in with Mr. Sessions.
Well, essentially by patron we mean campaign contributor.
Right.
And, of course, every politician has to disclose where campaign contributions come from.
Right.
And SBC has, over the course of his political career, been a major benefactor.
To what extent?
The numbers I don't know off the top of my head.
It says $75,000.
$75,000.
Over all of his campaigns.
That seems
Does that
like
sound reasonable?
That sounds right.
And what about his relationship previously with SBC? How long did he work there?
I think he worked there for over a decade.
Right. And the press release again says 16 years.
16 years as an executive at SBC. And I believe his wife works for SBC. His connections to the company are he makes no move to hide those. I don't mean to suggest that he's pulling a cloak and dagger. It's very open.
It's prominent in his biography on his website.
Absolutely. So.
But what wasn't on his website is what's in the first paragraph of this press release that says he owns $500,000 worth of stock options in SBC.
Yeah.
Who found that out, and what's the documentation for that?
I believe that is in a disclosure.
Okay.
That all members of Congress have to file.
Right.
Concerning their assets and liabilities.
You want to belabor the obvious of the connection between owning stock in a company that's going to benefit from a bill that you're authoring?
Well, I mean, we believe that when conflicts of interest are this evident and the appearance of a problem is there, it's important that the public knows.
Okay. Talk about the politics of this. Who's aligned in favor of it? Who's aligned against it? And where does it stand right now in the Congress?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, those that are in favor of a bill like this are the Bells and cable companies. Those that are against are pretty much everybody else. And that sounds like a partisan framing of the debate, but quite literally, on the side of supporting competition and public entry into the broadband services are the High-Tech Broadband Coalition, which is a group of some thousand companies, many of them manufacturers of high-tech equipment, software, you name it. They're all interested in seeing more people have access to broadband, because the more people have access, the more people are buying the things that go with broadband. Alongside them are those who sell the equipment to the municipalities. Alongside them are those who are the state governors and the local governors and the telecommunications officers. The consumer groups are in favor of this. The public interest groups are in favor of this. The electrical utilities are in favor of this.
Okay, say something about the counter, if you can, the argument made by the Bells and the cable companies that government intervention in the telecommunications market is unfair, unlawful, and by the looks of the title of this bill, anti-innovation.
As I said, I think the innovation argument is completely bogus. A duopoly is hardly an invitation to innovate and become an entrepreneur. The barriers to entry in a duopoly are severe. I think the notion that a local government is somehow unfairly competing against a private entity like a phone company that receives hundreds of millions of dollars in federal and state subsidies is complete nonsense. Those companies are some of the most have some of the biggest tax breaks of any industry that I know of.
So, in other words, they are benefiting from public policy.
Absolutely, and you know, sit on public rights away and take federal tax dollars. I also think it's disingenuous to suggest that the public doesn't participate in any marketplace. I mean, I think we need to look only so far as the transportation industry, which is often analogized to the information superhighway. You know, you look at New York City, for example. There's a public subway. The public invests dollars in public transportation because we need a baseline. Everybody has access, means of getting around the city. Does that put GM and Ford out of business? Absolutely not. Does that put the cab companies out of business? No. The limo companies? No. It is a decision made by the public to have a service that they believe is a common benefit.
Where do things stand in Congress? What's the status of the bill?
To my latest knowledge, the bill has zero co-sponsors. It has not been discussed in a committee, much less marked up. There's been no hearings. There's been nothing.
Okay. Why is telecommunications important politically as well as culturally and economically? And say something about where the companies like the cable companies and the Bells stand in that power equation.
Well, I mean, the politics of telecom right now are in an extreme form because some of the major legislation that governs the industry is being rewritten. Telecommunications Act of 1996 is being amended. The Digital Television Transition Bill is going through. Spectrum allocations are being redone. The conversion of digital communications onto a single network that carries voice, data, video, it's beginning to become all one communication system where before it was regulated as phone, cable, wireless, as individual entities. So all these companies are scrambling to try to get legislation that is favorable to their particular industry so they don't get left out of the bonanza as it comes down the pipeline.
Now, does that mean that if municipalities got into it, they could participate in the bonanza, both as a way of supporting themselves financially and offering lower price services to their residents?
I don't think the municipalities are in it for revenue generation. I think most of them are building networks that are sustainable and that have revenues that cover their costs and allow for them to expand and continue to meet the needs of their citizens. I think that's the major difference between a private broadband company and a public broadband company is the intent of the service.
Right, but in terms of if a wireless or other broadband networks were established that way, what you've just said about the convergence of digital technologies means that video and phone and e-government services could all be offered over that network, doesn't it?
It is possible, although I think in most cases you'll see what Philadelphia has done become the model, yeah, where the public monies go to build an infrastructure,
right,
and then the services, whether they're video or data or voice, are offered by private companies.
Okay. One last question. There didn't seem to be much impetus for gay marriage in the gay community until opponents of it raised that issue as a threat to the American way of life and put a lot of energy into defeating it, which seemed to generate a corresponding response that pushing for it. Do you think that a similar dynamic might be at work here? Municipal broadband is not on the evening news very often. Do you think that this effort by the cable companies and the phone companies to stifle, essentially in its cradle, the municipal broadband movement will give it more visibility and could also lead to a greater concentration of effort on the other side to push for municipal broadband more places than had considered it previously.
I think undeniably that dynamic has operated, and I think its most significant form is simply public awareness. In many small towns across the country that are without broadband access or without affordable broadband access, for years there have been no visible, viable solutions, and now that this debate has become so prominent, more city managers and mayors and civic leaders are becoming aware of what their options are, and they're pursuing them.
All right. Finally, what steps can people who feel they would like to see more muni broadband in their own community or generally, what can they do to influence policymakers on this?
One thing is to visit our website, which is www.freepress.net.
Right.
We have a number of educational pages about this issue, as well as connections to local and regional groups that work on this issue. We have numerous letters to Congress and information about how one can contact legislators in order to make their voices heard on this issue.
You have a specific petition going on?
We have a petition on this particular bill at the moment indicating our disapproval of it, and those, I think 25,000 odd of our members have already signed on.
Okay. How many members do you have?
We have about 200,000 members nationwide.
All right. I want to thank you for talking to us today about H.R. 2726, and I hope we can keep in touch as whatever eventuates happens and keep our listeners well informed as well.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks very much. Bye.